Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political middle and have on the political left, Councilwoman Shireen Gorbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hello, hello.
And representing the political right, on the right, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody. Post-election, it's all done.
And here we are on both sides of the aisle. And Shireen, I want to start right off the top with your election. Good heavens. Losing by under 1,200 votes. I looked, it was like 0.024 percentage points.
That's right.
I'd love to hear your reflections, but as I do that, I just want to just say to you, it's just been such a pleasure to get to know you in this role. And if this Laurie Stringham, I do not know Laurie Stringham, but if she's as committed to her public service as you've been, that would be wonderful, because you've been a terrific public servant, and I know you got more of it in you.
Oh, well, that's kind of you to say. Oh, my goodness. See, I get emotional anytime people are nice to me. So I really appreciate the feedback. I'll say this is like a real roller coaster, because as you may have known, the first night it was a really big separation in terms of votes. I think at the top it was about just shy of 20,000. I think it was like right around 17,000 votes. And then I kind of felt like we would stay up given that big of a spread. I kept thinking if I were on the other side of that, which I have been in the second congressional district, to see those kind of big margins, those big numbers, it was like, just kept thinking on the other side of this, I don't know if I could make it up. But then what we saw, and what we saw just across all of Salt Lake County, was 90% voter turnout. Not as many people. Certainly, we have a lot of people who could be voters who are not voters. We had a little bit lower turnout in our bluer areas and very, very high turnout in our red areas. And we had a bunch of people who just don't vote beyond the top of the ticket. So 37,000 people voted in the presidential race that didn't make it to the council race. And this is something that I've actually always been really interested in. By the time you're actually thinking about the things that impact your life, besides, of course, like the chaos of the Trump administration that I think people felt deeply impacted by every day, and certainly there were very damaging decisions that were made at the federal level that I know created a lot of personal pain in people's lives. But the real day-to-day life that you experience is more likely to be touched by decisions that somebody like I or somebody like Dan is making much closer to you. But we have a lot of people that just drop off. So between the county mayor's race and my race, 20,000 people dropped off. So when you're thinking about the decisions that are being made in your everyday life, and I think this is something that I'm just going to say, we got some lazy voters out there. That ballot shows up at your house. You've got time mm-hmm. to contact these candidates. And I have to say, this year I was so appreciative of the people who called me. You know, I mean, I had a website up mm-hmm. with a phone number, reached out, wanted to know, because we didn't have the kind of normal campaign year that we have. But I will say this, it's been a lot of work to serve in a pandemic. It's been an absolute honor. And I'm really excited to kind of figure out how I can continue to draw attention and create transparency in corners of our government that I think people often don't have access to or see. And I try to create a lot of transparency and a lot of access. I'm worried about that because it also means I'm running down a lot of questions for people. I'm trying to help people find rental assistance. I'm trying to help people figure out what to do with stray dogs. I try to help people with just about everything. And I'm no longer getting, you know, the support that I need to really do that work, or I won't be. But it needs to be done. So I'm trying to figure out what comes next.
Yeah, interesting. Dan, how would you react to what you're seeing here? I mean, Biden, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in Salt Lake County, won by 11 points over Trump, if that sounds right. Shireen, you can just kind of nod. Maybe you already know that. And yet here we have Shireen in her very committed, informed by data, all of her integrity and whatnot. And she's got a challenge here on her hands. The Salt Lake County, what did it go? The GOP is now 6-3 on the council.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Dan, let's hear from you.
You know, it's funny. You know, I'm going to talk about this objectively, like my friend Shireen's not, you know, virtually sitting next to me on the screen. So just forgive my political science nature of this. there were a few things I think that really changed the nature of Shireen's election, but a bunch of the down ballot elections. And like she said, you had people dropping off the ballot, right? So you start with the federal office, drop down to the state offices. And by the time you're down to the state offices, some people are fatigued. And so they don't mess with the county office, maybe the mayor. What this shows is, and I think it's very interesting, the Democrats have been pushing for years to get rid of straight party ticket voting. And so we finally did. And the crazy thing is, I legitimately think it's responsible for several of these races, because believe it or not, at least statistically, this was true. Democrats were using the straight party ticket option on the ballot more frequently than Republicans were. And it wasn't even close in Salt Lake County. And so getting rid of straight party ticket voting, while I understand the principle behind it, it did hurt some elections. And I think Shireen's was part of it, because people would in some instances, and in 20, if I remember right, 2016, it was as high as 40% on the Democrat side and 30 something percent on the Republican side. So it's a marginal difference. So I would say straight party ticket, this is the first election without them. It really impacted the races, especially down ballot. One. Two, but I don't think there's a Democrat who would say, I wish we had kept straight party ticket voting, which I admire about their principle. They're not thinking about the strategy of it. They're thinking about the principle of it. That's great. The other part of this, though, that I think was very interesting is when you get down to a race like Shireen's, there were very specific issues that I think impacted Shireen. You know, if you look at the race, and I actually saw somebody put this on Twitter. If you look at the county in Salt Lake County, and you could imagine the north half of the county is all blue and the south half of the county is all red. And it just shows there is this interesting, you know, bipartisan or interesting function going on in Salt Lake County. And I think this picture, somebody put it up there and they said, hey, here's what the boundaries should be for a new county in the south. And, you know, drawing a line somewhere on the east-west, which is an interesting flawed concept in some ways, but I can understand that objective. That said, the Democrats have got to be, despite the fact that they did pick up one legislative seat, they have to be very disappointed about the outcome of this race, solidifying Republican control of the Salt Lake County Council, a area that they, I think, were hoping this would be the election that finally switched it to their favor. That is a big loss. And I think it's going to take a while to kind of pick that momentum back up. So anyway, that the scientist off, I really, that night when the results were kind of final, I called Shireen, because I knew, like, being on the losing side of an election is super hard emotionally. And so anybody, I would just throw a pitch out there on Twitter, just share some love for Shireen, because this is not an easy position to be in. And I'm not looking at her as I say this, because I think I'll get emotional for her too. So that said, you know, there we go.
Well, we have a congressman in Ben McAdams that's in a similar situation, losing to Burgess Owens. I actually called Ben, just wanted to just reach out to him to just tell him how deep, you know, how much people respect him and how deep the affection is for him. But what's interesting to me is this United Utah Party, which was on the ballot, Jonia Broderick, you know, ended up, she said, you know, I want to send a message to run on issues. That was sort of her campaign. But she dropped out and endorsed McAdams. But by then, the damage was already done. And she was on the ballot and got over 8,000 votes. And McAdams loses by 3,700. Shireen, what do you think of a party like the United Utah Party that arguably has created some challenges for a moderate in the race?
Yeah, so I've got some real... So I really struggle with what the function of a party is. I think a party is supposed to exist to win races, to build capacity on the ground so that people are able to get across the finish line and win. And I would love to see the United Utah Party maybe really working in places, especially down ballot, where we have, I mean, there were so many races across this entire state that ran completely unopposed. That would be a great place to start building capacity, to offer an alternative voice. I think when you're doing it at the congressional level, it is a drag on, especially when we had somebody like Ben McAdams, who really is an independent voice for Utahns, who is serving, I think, that district, a tough district, well. It doesn't make sense to me, but it does make sense to me in other capacities. And frankly, I do think we should have more than two main political parties. I really do. But you got to be on the ground building the capacity and building the infrastructure for candidates to win. That was not part of the picture in the 4th Congressional District. And so I have a hard time understanding the reason to have that candidate in the race.
Yeah. And can I just add, Natalie, really quickly, don't forget, like, the United Utah Party, I totally get where they're coming from, try to reward the middle, that kind of thing, 8,000 votes. But let's talk about the far, I guess, right? I don't know where you look at the pendulum, but the Libertarian in that race got 13,000 votes, right? So you talk about spoilers in the race. You know, it's just interesting when you add that additional dynamic of where those votes go. Do all of those middle votes for the UUP, do all of those go to Ben, right? Or do all those go to Burgess that are in the Libertarian Party? You'll never know. But this is why there is a stronger push for ranked choice voting, so that people can, you know, get their preference known, that kind of thing. And that would be a very interesting change for our elections.
Yeah. Well, we got to take a break. But I just, as you know, I'm been interesting to see what Ben McAdams does next. He's always been so moderate, thoughtful, collaborative. So I'm sure there's big things ahead for him, and I feel the same for you, Shireen. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to talk about vaccines, Dan and Shireen. It's because the state, put out a little bit more detail on the state's vaccine timeline. Just as a reminder here, they divided into phases or waves in this first phase, and this is really before the end of the year. This is where we have limited vaccines, so we go vaccinate our healthcare staff, the long-term care facilities. But interestingly, I noticed on the list of that first phase, they also include first responders, high-risk populations, but Shireen, they included teachers and childcare staff. I thought this was very positive.
Yeah, I have to say I've been getting more messages from teachers that are, in part, it's just we're at a level where I'm hearing from teachers. I heard from a special ed teacher today who just tested positive, and I think whatever we can do to help protect our teachers is really critical.
Yeah. Dan, then we go to phase two, which is after the first of the year, and you continue to vaccinate some of those earlier ones, but then you bring in racial and ethnic minority groups, correctional facilities, the homeless population, colleges and universities, people who are under or uninsured. And then finally, by the second quarter, you start really getting the rest of the population. But just the fact that we're talking about it brings me so much hope.
Well, and I'm just going to throw this out there because timing is everything. But I think if this vaccine news had happened 3 weeks ago, I legitimately think it, or maybe even a month ago, it probably may have changed the outcome of the presidential race. And I know, we want to talk about politics, that kind of stuff. Because the presidential race is behind
politics.
Us, sure. I know.
That's all we do.
But I would say that, like, it's really good news. And I worry, I worry, at least I hope people recognize the reason why ethnic minorities and some of these groups are in the second wave instead of, swapping in our general population, because they're the ones that are being hit the hardest. They're the ones who are in the services industries. They're the ones who are, for all intents and purposes, they don't have the ability to distance in a lot of ways. And so I just think, I hope that everybody will recognize that. That's when I heard that, I said, boy, I hope Utah recognizes why that's important.
Yeah. You mentioned living intergenerationally. More of our communities of color tend to live intergenerationally. And I think that's where we're seeing the most spread in our community. So it is really, it's a smart way to prioritize.
Yeah.
Dan, you've been a part of some discussions on Capitol Hill that, deal with the state's response. The state epidemiologist, Angela Dunn, shares data. It's basically under the notion of why are we making such a big deal about COVID? And then she shows you side by side in a particularly bad flu year that we'll have 338,000 cases in Utah, but we'll have 94 deaths. And then she shows you that with COVID, we have 159,000 cases and 732 deaths. This is in the time frame that she's looking at, but she makes the case that this is completely different than the seasonal flu.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd actually seen it laid out that clearly and that well thought out, because you hear that a lot, like this is just the flu, this is just the flu. Obviously, the difference is, you know, with the seasonal flu, we have four vaccines available, right, to deal with the seasonal flu. And we have ongoing research and development that's constantly trying to stay ahead of the flu and guessing where its next mutation is, right? So that is well-developed science. We've been doing it for almost 100 years. We're in pretty good shape on the flu vaccine, and that's why we're able to mitigate death as well as we are. But when you contrast that with, you know, COVID, I mean, until this week, we had zero vaccines and no other methods for treatment other than when people get to the hospital, try and keep them off of ventilators as long as we can and go through the remedial measures that they're doing there. Death prevention is not a treatment plan. And that's what kind of think Angela Dunn made clear, you know, in these presentations that I was part of this last week.
Yeah. Shireen, I'm sure you have a lot to say there. And I wanted to change to an economic topic on the COVID response. Do you want to say anything about the Angela Dunn data? Well, so, you know, the idea is you got health and economy and you're trying to weigh these. I finally was privy to data that showed how much stimulus the state received from the federal government. It totaled $12.7 billion, which in the second quarter of this year was about 22% of our GDP.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable amount of stimulus. And just to put it in perspective, during the Great Recession, when the Obama stimulus came, it was called ARRA monies. That was under $3 billion.
Yeah.
So we're orders of magnitude more all coming to us. This is the Paycheck Protection Program, the expanded unemployment, some of the coronavirus relief funds you got in Salt Lake County. There was $2.6 billion in direct payments to Utah households.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's wonderful, but at the same time, it's gone.
It's gone. So these are the conversations I'm having this week. I've been speaking with a lot of restaurant bar owners, people who have been hanging on. They are doing their level best to follow the health guidelines, trying to operate safely, certainly doing that. They haven't, you know, seen large cases from their operations or community spread, and they are on the ropes. Our small businesses are absolutely struggling, and we need another round of relief for those businesses. I'm also terrified to report that I heard from individuals that I pointed to rental assistance that many of our pots of money for rental assistance are also largely depleted. And we have people that are going to be heading into the winter with a lot of instability. And I would just call on, you know, Senators Romney and Lee, who really have an opportunity to lead here, especially for our hospitality industry that is so hard hit. They need to step up or these businesses are not going to be here after the new year.
Yeah. Dan, I know you at times have thought about running for Congress, but would you be actively working for stimulus right now? I know you have conservative leanings about the debt and everything, and certainly it's not been... Well, the Democrats seem willing to spend, the Republicans don't.
Well, what I would be in favor of from a stimulus standpoint is making sure, one, that it's targeted, right? It's not we took a very shotgun approach to stimulus the last time we passed a bill. It was just, we're going to open up the gates to the Treasury. Everybody take what you need. You know what I mean? And that was probably a little bit, now, we were in a time where we kind of needed to be in that position. Now, though, being a little more laser focused, you know, focusing on the hospitality industry, focusing on, you know, the places that are hardest hit, that kind of deal, that to me seems like it'd be reasonable. And then really trying to step back from there so that you're really measuring the stimulus that's there. And the other part of it is, and we're going to have to deal with this, but you can't have an ongoing deficit like we do and still constantly feel like we're going to turn the corner soon. And so this deficit spending component is definitely going to be a problem in the upcoming months and years. And hopefully we can come roaring out of this COVID deal, and that President Biden and, you know, his group will establish confidence in the markets and we can kind of move forward. But I will say, if you start seeing the president rolling out some radical progressive agenda, you know, in his first 90 days, I will tell you that will have the opposite impact on the market.
Like what, Dan?
And may make things worse. You
like
know what
kind of programs?
Well, I would say if the president right now walked out and said we're joining the Paris Accord again and we're ready right now, day one, we're implementing the Green New Deal, I think that will cause enough fear in the market. I'm not saying it's good or bad policy, leave that out there, but that type of change will be dramatic enough for the market that it will send the wrong message.
So I think
that's all it is.
I think one that's really exciting is the potential of $50,000 cancellation in student loan debt. I mean, think about what that would do as an economic stimulus. If we were really
nothing, it would do nothing to fix the problems of higher education and making sure, because we have institutions.
Do you know how many young people don't buy homes? Do you know how many young people don't start businesses because of crushing student loan debt?
I know. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
That's
completely,
right. Because it's a good idea.
But focusing on innovating in higher ed is more important, I think, because you have far too many people, myself included and others, who have paid off student loan debt.
Okay, but that's not the argument. The argument is for those who are currently having it. I'm just saying that's one that I think is exciting that could be a massive benefit to our economy right now.
You know, the one that I would hate to see is tax increases right out the gate. That would be a tough one, particularly during this downturn.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to bring out some more local news. We have Senator Romney calling out President Trump again. He's challenging him on the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. I'll just read a quote from Romney. He said, "At a time when our adversaries are looking for every opportunity to exploit our weaknesses, the administration should reconsider and reverse this politically motivated decision and avoid worsening our national security challenges." Shireen and Dan, that Romney just won't stop. He's going to keep speaking his mind when it comes to, I would call them conservative principles that he thinks that the president goes wrong on. Shireen, real brief comments.
No, let Dan go.
Look, I appreciate that. I'm just going to tell you that President Romney is part of the problem when it comes to our Middle Eastern interminglings. And honestly, the desire to stay in those wars and in those countries is not flattering to me from a U.S. senator, period. So despite the fact that he doesn't like them, it's funny. Everybody thought Trump was going to bring on World War II, and all he seems to do is continue to denounce and bring troops back home. And it's funny when you see the political establishment lose control of that ability.
Yeah, so I'm also anti-war. I would love to, you know, see less of a presence in that respect. But I also feel like we have to be very strategic about what those troops are doing and draw down in a way that's safe and creates stability. A real vacuum is something that we experienced in the 1980s in that area and led to really what we see today. So I think that there has to be a careful plan, and that's not what this is.
You know, Shireen, I'm going to agree with you there. It's clear the administration's not kind of shown why this is the right time and how they're going to do it well. It seems more like I've got, 30 more days in office. I better do this and this and this.
Which is something I would ultimately love to see, right? Just done well.
Yeah. A little closer to home, and I know this is a difficult one to comment on, but I'll go to you first, Shireen. And it's difficult to comment on just because it's in state government, not in county government and whatnot. But we have this former agricultural commissioner, Kerry Gibson. The state auditor just released a pretty stinging audit, taking state cars on personal trips, improperly upgrading hotel rooms and airplane seats, some cannabis licensing that looked ill-informed or favorable to some but not others. I just hate it when this stuff happens because I think this is supposed to be public service.
Yeah, it sounds like a real abuse of the role.
Yeah. Dan, did this sting up on Capitol Hill a little bit? I mean, this is a member of the governor's cabinet and a pretty stinging audit, and they just seem to keep they come every year.
Yeah.
At all levels of government, I'll say.
And it seems to me, as I read the audit today, it seems to me that it represents a level of entitlement that had apparently had been achieved in that office that created some problems, right? And so it's too bad, honestly, that there aren't controls in place to prevent that kind of stuff from happening as it's happening.
Shireen, this isn't a really fair thing. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but our last segment, you wanted to talk, not our last segment, but our last show, you wanted to talk about homeless services a little bit. Yeah. The Gardner Institute released some studies on it. What would you like to know about the homeless services work?
I feel like we're running out of time, but what I would love is to invite the community, if you're listening to the show and you've got questions about homelessness services, or if you've got ideas about what you would like to see, send us a message or tweet at us. I would love to take some time on the next episode to really talk about this.
Let's do it. I'm Natalie Gochter in the Political Center. I've been joined by Dan McKay and Shireen Gourbani. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Thanks for listening.